Tito Puente, the great percussionist, and his Latin ensemble with Take Five. It was a title track from his 1985 album that was released on, and this was a title track of it. And the album was titled Mambo Diablo. But Tito Puente, of course, you really get to rediscover him if you already knew him. And if you never heard of him, get to know his music. Phenomenal, phenomenal music. This is Lead Stories. I'm Eutrice Lead, and it is Free Your Mind Friday. If you're new to it, well, it is a way of you expressing your thoughts and opinions, hopefully very considered thoughts and opinions, and you take the conversation where you want it to go, and you should have, please have an opinion, a strong opinion, backed up with some kind of facts, some kind of reference that gives your statements and your opinion credibility. So it's not about me telling you what to say, it is about you presenting cogent thoughts and opinions for people to consider, and you should be willing to bear the responsibility of proving your point through citing sources and giving us a sense that you have done some homework in putting together your argument. 888-874-4888 is the number to call. Again, if you're new, welcome, and we're glad to have you on board. But it is important for you to say exactly what you're thinking, and tell us how you came to that conclusion, whatever the conclusion is. And then leave it there for people to figure out whether they agree or disagree. It is not really important whether they agree or disagree. It is important that they appreciate your arguments. 888-874-4888 is the number to call. And we start off with Ali from New York.
Hi, Eutrice. How are you doing?
Okay. How are you?
Well, just hanging in like everybody else, like all those brothers and sisters.
Yeah, we're all hanging in. That's
yeah,
for sure.
That's right. We're just hanging in because we are like pawns right now, just waiting to see if it's going to happen to us.
Yes, that's true.
It's a terrible feeling. It's a terrible feeling.
So what are you giving us an insight into today?
Okay, I wanted to make two comments. One is about Liz in Michigan, and and another one is about the pandemic, but I wanted to say this because you had a conversation about Michigan and these people that they were in front of the Capitol building. One thing that I noticed, and I went back after I heard your talk, is that I understand what you were saying, that people are going to come out on the street and protest, and I hope that really, really happens, because I don't think the crumbs of $1,200 is going to do for a lot of people. But these people in Michigan, one thing that I noticed, a few things when I look at them, I look at the pictures. Some people in front of the building, they were outside. Everyone there, I didn't see one person of color, and a lot of these people, they were carrying their rifles, the guns. And a lot of people, they had the MAGA hats, and also supporting Trump and Pence.
MAGA hat being Make America Great Again hat.
Yes, okay. Yes.
Yes.
So those were my observations. So these are the people that they wanted to defy the woman who is a governor in that state, and is supporting actually Trump. That is the reason that they came out. I'm not saying that their life is not hard for a lot of the people that they were there, but to me, the meaning of that protest was about coming out and saying we support Trump and what he wants to do to put people out there on harm's way. That's what I got from that protest.
Well, you're absolutely right. She had commented, the mayor, I mean, not the mayor, the Governor Whitmer, had said it looked like a political rally. Well, it looked like what it was. It was a political rally. But here is the issue. We stop at that. Well, it's a political rally. It's a Trump rally. Okay, so what? Now the question is, where's your rally?
That's right.
They are speaking up for their interests. Where are the people speaking for our interests? You can't be mad at them. If you saw them carrying guns, they have permits for their guns and whatever. We may not like it, but they're not breaking the law. They are animated about their interests. Where is the counter protest? It didn't exist, did it?
Nope.
So we can't be angry.
That's right. But the reason that I called today is about, it just says something about the pandemic. You see, I know that the Trump is looking for a war, to attack Venezuela, China, Russian, Nicaragua, all Cuba, all these places. But you see, the war is here. Because I will say this, right now we have a war, and they have this government has a war against the citizen of this country. They knew about this pandemic coming, and these people, they were lying right on our faces, right on TV. These men going every day, and he knew since last year about this pandemic. But also, he did nothing, and he doesn't really want to do anything for the citizens of this country. He wants everybody to come out and start working. This is what he wants. So it's a war against the citizens of this country, and the war is so big against us. And when I said us, I said every person of any ethnicity. So if they think that Caucasian is not a war against them, yes, it is a war against them too. Unfortunately, the pandemic is attacking people of color more than them. But if you take a look at what he has done, taking down the environmental regulations against the water, to let this company pollute our water, the air, and you go on and on with all these regulations, it's not only a war against us, letting this pandemic attack us the way it's attacking all of us. It's also the war that he had created, because it's about corporations making money and attacking citizens, the citizens of this country. And
you,
that is the reason.
Right on the mark. You're right on point. But Ali, to be very, very serious about this, where is the opposition? Asking the question, where is the opposition? Major things are happening, and we're not out there seen as opposing anything or mobilizing against anything. So naturally, the implication is either we're not concerned or we don't care. And even when it comes to the matter of our own lives, our own communities, we are not sufficiently concerned enough to mobilize. The people who are out in the streets, they understand that mobilizing and being seen and being out there and protesting, there's great value to that. Because they're speaking for not just themselves individually, but for their communities. Where is our response?
But I do have a response for you. I have these signs that I put on my coat, and I go every time that I go out to the store, I put those signs on. One of the signs, Julie, who easily sometimes calls your program, I have sent her, she has seen it, and she has seen me with those signs. Even during this pandemic, I'm still out there showing my concern for other human beings. One of the last sign that I made was no money for PPE, but trillions for corporations. That's how, that was my last sign. That is the last one that I walked 2 days in a row last week with that sign on the back of my coat.
Well, I congratulate you, because this has been your history. Your history has been mobilizing and being present and being seen as an objector, a person who is not at all condoning what is going on. Hopefully it would inspire people. If this situation does not inspire people to really get serious and advocate for themselves and their communities, I don't know what will. I don't know what will. But the good news is that there are people like you, consistent in expressing not only your opinion, but advocating for other people who aren't advocating for themselves. So thank you for your call, and thank you for your work, your consistent community work. Thanks a lot, Ali, for calling in. George from New York, you're on the air.
How are you doing, Eugene?
I'm hanging in. How about you?
All right. I'm just, I don't know. I got a big cloud over my head, that's all. But I think there's one thing that's being missed is the massive gentrification. And it goes across all so-called ethnicities. If you come up through Westchester, they're just building, like, they're tearing down everything. They tear down semi-forest, and they're building condos or whatever they're doing. That goes from Westchester all the way up to the Dutchess County. And you see it. You go there 1 week, and you come back the next week, something else is there. So who's going to be in these places? That's what I, you know, just a massive gentrification, and I don't think that people understand what gentrification is.
Well, could you take a stab at the issue? Who is going, you asked the question, who is going to be in these places? What do you think it's all about?
Basically, there's a book that in 1970s, it's, we're insignificant and we're innocent, but you got to go. That's what it was, a vanishing right to live. And all these little things that we, all these things, big things really, that they're doing right now, is that was in that book. And
here's what's happening.
Who can,
all over America, all over America. The people in the know, which is real estate, they know what's coming.
Right.
And what's coming is you clear the land of the undesirable people and you make preparations for desirable folks. And you do this in conjunction or in concert with the shift that is occurring. The real estate market is going to go down to the point of almost shambles. And then it will rebuild itself because that's the way it's planned. This is not something that is happening by itself. This is planned. And again, I'll go back to Ali in referencing her. You know what's happening. Everybody in your community has an idea of what's coming. And yet we don't see mass reaction to what's coming. You won't be able to live where you live now. You won't be able to pay rents or mortgages. You won't be able to buy a house. It's the cycle that started. We know the cycle very well. But we are not being proactive about it. We're not getting excited about this new wave of preparation for the cleansing of our neighborhoods and communities in preparation for a total shift. This is what is happening. You don't have to be a rocket scientist to know that. You see it every single day. Some places look desolate already. Businesses have shut down. They've moved out. People have moved. New people are coming in if they are allowed to, because a lot of these businesses, once they're shut, they just remain shut. They're not selling to new people. They're just remaining shut because the value is still there. The value is in the land. The value is in the location. You'd be surprised at how many locations that are considered absolutely undesirable are really worth a heck of a lot. Because the industry and the movers and shakers in the industry are manipulating how communities, new communities will spring up and values will shoot through the roof. They don't care if there's short-term trouble. Long-term gain is what they're after, and they see it. It's coming. Thank you, George. Thanks so much for contributing. Patricia from New York, you're on the air.
Good afternoon, Utrice, and good afternoon to the PRN family. I hope everyone is staying well and be safe.
Thank you,
you know,
very much.
I have to agree with Ali, and I want to just maybe lend another perspective here, because I think what we're talking about is the worldwide depopulation of Black and brown people, not just here in the U.S., but around the world. So earlier this week, I don't know if you heard, there were two French doctors, well-respected French doctors, as a matter of fact, who suggested that as they are developing vaccines to respond to COVID-19, that these vaccines should be tested on Africans in Africa, because we know that they don't protect themselves, and they would be good test subjects on which to test these vaccines. Now, of course, there was a lot of pushback and blowback, and they received a lot of criticism, and of course, they had to backtrack and said, well, what they didn't really mean what they said they said. But then you look at what is happening to Black Africans in China, who are being put out on the street, who are sleeping on the street in gutters because they are being blamed for the second wave of COVID-19 in China. And, of course, thankfully, there's been a big blowback by many African countries to China. But, you know, so you have in France, you have the well-respected people talking about testing, you know, using Africans like guinea pigs. In China, you have Africans being dehumanized and brutalized. And then you come to the United States. And earlier this week, there was blowback by AOC and many people who responded to Jim Cramer, who comes on CNBC. And earlier this week, you know, the stock market was having this huge rebound, and he was celebrating this rebound as people are suffering. And then locally in New York, 3 days ago, the mayor, Mayor de Blasio, was begging the dollar stores to donate rain ponchos. You know those 99-cent rain ponchos mm-hmm. that you would go in and buy? That he was begging them to donate rain ponchos because they were running out of gowns. But if, as a healthcare worker, you were concerned about your health and your safety, and you decided to call in sick, you now have to bring a doctor's note, as they are paying nurses who have come from out of state into New York to assist healthcare workers who are dropping like flies. They won't pay their healthcare workers who are on the front lines, but they're paying people coming into New York six times what they're paying healthcare workers who work for them. So what are we talking about? It's worldwide.
Yes, and it is also worldwide the lack of a cogent, organized, vigorous response. That's what's also happening. All of these atrocities are occurring, and they're being allowed to occur because a vacuum exists, and the vacuum is lack of information, lack of organization in our community, and lack of opposition. We're letting all of this happen. They wouldn't dare think of having this scenario exist in other communities because those communities would respond. We're not responding. We're not responding. You're correct. These things are being done. They're wrong. They're immoral. But we cannot defer, you know, our interests are not to be deferred to somebody else to protect.
You're right.
That's our job. That is our job. And to the extent that it doesn't exist means that we have no particular interest in protecting ourselves and our communities. It's laissez-faire. Anybody could come in and do what they want to do, and they're assured there'll be no opposition. They'll get away with it. The cycle has gone on year after year, decade after decade, and here we are, constantly repeating the cycle of self-degradation. I don't understand it.
Neither do I.
But this is the thing. What more do we need as incentive to get off our butts and get into action to protect ourselves and our families and our communities? What greater incentive are you waiting for? You know, this is a question. No other community that I know of as an organized ethnic community will allow these atrocities to occur. No other community would put up with that. But we allow it, and in some cases, sad to say, we assist. We help the process along. And then one day we wake up and say, Harlem is gone. Well, of course it's gone. That was the plan. They executed their plan. They won. You lost. Get out. That's where we are.
Unfortunately, I'm afraid.
It is true. Thanks, Patricia. Thanks for calling in and contributing today. Jay from New York City, you're on the air.
Good afternoon, you three. Hope all
Hello,
is well.
Hello, Jay. How are you?
I'm doing good. Sad to say, you three, I have to agree with you. It looks like it's a wrap. I think this thing is going to metamorph into something that we as a nation will never imagine it to be. And like you said, we need to be out in the street right now, but the sheep will not be out in the streets. The leadership in this country is the worst that one could ever imagine and hope for. It seems that now Florida's governor, who I think is one of the most evilest and sickest human beings on the planet, is now going to open up the beaches. I think that the last time they had their little get-together on the beaches, people went back to other states and took the virus with them and affected the lives of peoples in those communities and now he's going to do it again. And nobody's standing up about that. But they're standing up about their right to go to a job that don't even pay them fairly, nor do it allow them to feed their families. And on top of that, when the time comes to go back to work, the jobs may not even be there. But instead of asking the government at this time in dealing with this crisis to put together some sort of university fund to feed people, to make sure that they have income, to have shelter and things of that nature, these characters and clowns, they're not protesting on that level. It's going to get bad. And you know something?
It's going to get bad? Did you just say that? It is bad.
Well, it's going to get worse. Let me rephrase it. It's going to get worse. And I don't think that there's anything in place to stop it from getting worse, and that's the absolute tragedy.
All right, let me say something that you probably might disagree with. It's not their job to do. We keep assigning responsibility to the so-called leadership. The leadership has demonstrated time and again, whatever it is the people configure as being their job, the leaders don't think it's their job, so they don't do it. We have to come to the point of understanding we are the leaders. We are the leaders we're looking for. We are the people who should be the authors of what's going on in our communities, our schools, our jobs, places of employment. We are the ones. We are the ones who should be dictating, probably that's a bad word, but we are the ones who should be defining the role of government in our communities. We are totally lacking. We have given up all authority over our governance, our self-governance. We've assigned it to somebody else and we say, here, you handle it. And then we feel good about it because at some point, if we disagree, we could protest. That's not leadership. Leadership is every day. Regulating your community every single day. Having a say in what's going on in your neighborhood every single day. But it is, I don't think there's too many of an exception to this rule. But I would say it is reasonably accurate to say we have absolutely fallen down on the job. And this is in our interest. We have failed. And we are allowing the leadership of our community to fail without any expectation of having to account or having to pay a price. We accept their underperformance. We accept their poor leadership. We accept the status quo, that we aren't on the top of the list. So we have encouraged this by tolerating this underperformance for all these decades. And every now and then, when things get exceedingly bad, then do we protest? By then, what does it matter? You've already proven the point over and over again. You have and you want no power. You don't want power. Consequently, you don't have any. It's too much of a responsibility to assume control and power over your own community. So you have yielded that. You yielded it a long time ago. You have no credibility in your own community as leaders. But we point the finger. He is responsible. She is responsible. That councilman or that councilwoman, that state senator, that state assemblyman, and you know they have no power. They're just as powerless as the communities they represent. We are not serious about power. We don't want it. It is too much of a responsibility, and we don't want to handle that. Let somebody else handle it, even if they destroy your community, destroy you. Give it to them, because it frees you up to hang out, to have extra time on your hands. We don't, that's the fact, we don't want the responsibility of leadership. It is too hard, too much work. It's an everyday thing. We don't want that. You mentioned Florida. You look around Florida and you see the devastation, the decimation of communities, the loss of land, the loss of power and authority over what happens on your land. And you're still doing nothing. We are responsible. We can't get away from it. We are the ones to blame. We are the ones who caused this catastrophe because of inaction, because of self-hate. We hate ourselves. We won't take control over those things that everybody readily recognizes as assets. Land is great, great asset to have. When you control several blocks, several stretches of land, you have power. When you control housing in a particular area, you have power. When you control the commerce in your community, you have power. When you control the resources of the land, you have power. But it's too hard. We don't want to move at that level. It takes too many hours. It's just too hard. Let them handle it. And from time to time, we make public statements and send out news releases about us being very discontented about what the government is about to do. I am done with that kind of feckless leadership. I have no patience with it. And we have to call to account, in large measure, we have to call into account ourselves. What is it that they stand for when all is said and done? Your words are not matching your actions. You have no real commitment to community ownership. You have no commitment to community building. You have no ownership of your educational system, your housing, your healthcare. You have no ownership and you don't intend to have it. There you go. That's the truth. All righty. I see from David from California, you're on the air.
Oh, greetings, Latrice. Called in a while. I've got some good news from San Francisco. Hello? Are you there?
Yes, yes.
Oh, good, good. Yeah, greetings. I hadn't called in a while. I've got good news from San Francisco. We shut down February 5th, basically. We discovered that one of our conventions had someone that was infected there, and so the entire convention center got shut down. That led to the hotels pretty much just getting shut down, and a decision by the city leadership that, you know, since we're an international city, it would just be smarter to shut it down. There were a lot of, you know, the big money types that were crying the blues, but they also realized that an infected population would kill millionaires as well as killing the homeless. And so just shutting it down would take care of things. And now the death count as of last night in San Francisco is 17 people. You know, New York City is losing over 700 people per day, yet San Francisco is sitting at 17 dead as of, you know, two and a half months ago. And so shutting it down, reading a good book, staying at home, watching some movies, you know, pay attention to talk radio if you want, but by God, don't go to work. Don't let the money grubbers tell you that you have to risk your life in order to, you know, in order to keep the economy going. You remember the old famous Edgar Allan Poe story, The Mask of the Red Death, about a crazy king who sees an epidemic outside the castle window, and he decides that he can just stop this epidemic by slamming the door and having a party. Well, that's where Trump is. These people are crazy. They have, you know, money on the mind, and they don't have a lick of sense when it comes to science or medicine. So, you know, we don't need to listen to them. We just need to shut it down and read a good book.
Well, here is a bizarre interpretation of it. What is happening, the people, there are people in power and systems in power that have no problem with it at all.
Well, Boris Johnson did. Apparently, you know, Boris Johnson tried to convince Trump to cull the herd, to just allow the mass epidemic to waste into the you know, and have the survivors create a new economy or some junk. And Boris Johnson came down with it. And apparently Boris Johnson's health secretary in England was convincing him that that was the libertarian model and that by God, that was going to work. And so
We keep reinventing things in order to have explanations as to what is happening now. The last thing we do is remind people we've been through several cycles of this.
Well, you mean in history or this particular?
Yes, in history.
Well, you know, it's interesting. You
whether
write
it
that.
Was with the Native Americans with
smallpox
infected blankets.
Right. Yeah.
Whether it was typhoid fever or the pox introduction of diseases, we've been through this.
Oh, yeah. Columbus, was it Hispaniola? They lost 90% of the population of that island within years. Yeah, it's horrible what, you know, intent will do.
We keep talking as if this is new.
Well,
history, you go to your history books and you see cycle after cycle after cycle that achieves one thing. And that is the disappearance of people who are no longer thought of as necessary. They killed them off.
I don't know if you noticed, but Trump lost one of his investors the other day. One of his business partners died.
Yes.
You know, I don't trust Trump at all. I was going to ask you if you remember the official story of this is that there were some bats. People were eating bats in the Chinese city.
I'm not paying attention to any of that.
Well, what I was wondering.
Here's where I'm stuck. I'm stuck with the reality. This is a reality we know. Going back centuries.
You mean of a genocide? You mean genocide used, an epidemic used in a genocidal way? Well, absolutely.
Correct.
So
why are we talking as if this is new? What the people who have been targeted, the people who are doing most of the dying, they have direct links going back centuries ago to what happened then. This is nothing new. What we have to get exercised about is making the historical record relevant to our current experience, because they are linked.
Well, yeah, I agree, and in a way, you know, before the 1914 flu epidemic, there was actually a huge epidemic when they were building the Panama Canal, and the famous General Leonard Wood was responsible for building the canal, and they had I'm trying to remember if it was malaria or if it was what's the disease you get from bad water, cholera, but apparently the people in Panama knew the cure for it, and it apparently was eating a certain types of certain fruit, and Leonard Wood refused to allow the builders to eat that kind of fruit. He banned it. He destroyed every crop there was, and he spread the epidemic. So the building of the Panama Canal was just about 10 years before the flu in 1918, and it was just a horror, you know, how many lives it took to build the Panama Canal. And that was definitely an intentional destruction of the building, you know, the workforce down there.
Most of it having intentionality, people know what they want as the desired result of these horrible programs of extinction.
Right, right. Well, what I was going to ask, and this is what I was leading up to with the bats thing, I'm wondering if this isn't really more of a pollution-based disease. So in other words, if people, I can't even imagine eating bats is a normal food even in China. That has to be like starvation kind of food, you know, like eating dogs and cats.
Not necessarily. Not necessarily at all.
Well, they're not considered a delicacy, and they're too small.
Places acclimate different tastes. You know, people do it as if to say, look how primitive they are. You know, that's not what it is. People in different parts of the world, you go some places like in the Middle East, and they throw a big elaborate feast for you. And guess what? You will get the prize. You will get the prize. What is the prize? The eyeballs of a sheep. Now, it may sound really barbaric to you, but that's their custom.
Right, but bats are tiny and full of bones.
Bats are not tiny. Well, you've got to know a little bit more about bats.
Well,
you have bats, huge bats, all over the world. Bats come in various forms, various shapes and sizes. And bats, in some places, play a very important role in fertilizing flowers and plants because they carry them in their fur. So bats have been criminalized because, you know, it was good in the movies. But people are horrified that Americans eat beef. How grotesque, how primitive. We, on the other hand, we have done exactly the same thing. We have criminalized many of the historical, cultural ways and norms of different societies. Because we go, ugh. Well, that's how they've lived. And they've been here on the planet thousands of years before you got here. Eating the same foods. So we have to be careful about these things. We're too quick to apply our primitive ways to other societies and making them responsible for it. Thanks for calling in. Ma'at, you're on the air.
Greetings to the truly beloved family. First, I want to, I have some important information, so let me make that last point before you move on, if I can. First, I want to amplify what Ali and Patricia, the points that they were making about the what happened in Michigan. Okay, first of all, they called it Operation Gridlock, and it was truly that because a brother who made a video as he was stuck in traffic, he showed his badge trying to get as a hospital worker, right? And as people are dying, and he couldn't get through, and they were trumpets, the Trumpites, whatever you might call them. One had a sign saying Whitmore, who the governor who Trump referred to, the woman or that woman. That's how self-reflexive he is, comparing her to Hitler behind the physical distancing. And I can say for sure, Utrecht, that is definitely contagious out there. I won't mention my elixir, but I think the listeners know that I had to get in and take a bit of that to get out of furious sniffles, so it's contagious for sure. And in terms of counter-protests, we can't go there right now. Maybe that'll give us some other ways to organize, but if you go out in a crowd now, you're going to likely get sick and make others sick, so that's not even an option. Now, Wednesday, Utrecht, after your program, a lot of times I go to NPR to hear the news, but something made me stay on the PRN, and that guy, boy, I think it's Dean Wigginton, he's got some passion with geoengineering watts, so I really listened to his program. And at some point, and I'm sure it's searchable, Anthony Fauci, Dr. Anthony Fauci of the NIH, National Institute of Infectious, Allergic and Infectious Diseases, blah, blah, blah. He, I think, was doing a TED Talk, although I'm not completely sure on that. But in 2017, he said there will be a pandemic during the Trump administration. So when we put the larger view of this puzzle, okay, how did Anthony Fauci know 3 years ago that there would be this contagious pandemic coming during the Trump administration? So that's something that should really knock all of us on our feet. Now, lastly, those of us who get some form of Social Security, in terms of an advocacy phone number that came up on their site, in other words, people who was where you could get a live person, the information 2 weeks ago was that today was the day where you would get that $1,200 if you receive any form. So if anybody either today or Monday or Tuesday, whenever, has some information or have gotten that money, okay, because people are on the edge of their seat with their bills right now, I would appreciate hearing about that. And I'll let you move on to another caller. Appreciate the time.
Thank you. Thanks for calling, and thanks for sharing. Look, in a way, it's going to sound very odd what I'm going to say. When these pandemics and major crises occur, we tend to become very enmeshed in the current moment, and that is quite understandable. We are, of course, living in these times. These disasters are occurring in these times, and so we are necessarily myopic. We don't see the need to take the longer view. But as I said, when you stop a minute, And then you begin to see that this is only the most recent iteration of the old formula. Clear the decks of people who are really of no use in terms of how the society is thinking of things and going. We have no use. A whole bunch of people are of no use or will be of no use. Why not clear the decks? However you can do it. You cull the herd. You lessen the burden. And that simple analysis, or some people would say simplistic, well, you can say what you want. But you look at the historical record, and it is no accident that throughout the course of history, we see these kinds of pandemic type diseases and major mass catastrophes occurring, wiping out people. Sometimes it's in the form of a disease, like the coronavirus. Sometimes it's environmental, as in the poisoned water. Sometimes it's in the air that people are breathing. Whatever the agency, it almost becomes incidental to the main focus. Why is it that at certain times in our collective history, we see just inexplicable violence being done? It seems as if, it comes across as if certain peoples are targeted. And we get neat explanations. Nobody has answered the question so far, how is it this thing just suddenly appeared? How did it suddenly appear? Viruses don't suddenly appear. And then it picks up over here. How did it get there? But we waste time, in a sense, thinking about these things when we should be accepting, we should start at the end. The end being, we see where the devastation is occurring and we understand the impact it already has had. And then we see how very much like other diseases or disasters this is. Typhoid fever, the Black Death, we have all kinds of diseases wiping people out. And they're always common people, working people. You don't see a disease that wipes out every rich person in the world. You don't see diseases wiping out the autocrats, the dictators of the world. No. They tend to wipe out ordinary people. Because in my mind, these are the expendables. And according to nefarious plans, I have no proof of whether they've had meetings or whether they've had convocations and thought it out that way. But it is hard for me to resist thinking that these things are not hatched somewhere and then executed so as to yield a predictable result. In the meantime, we have to fight. But we have to fight smarter. Every time we have to fight smarter, as if we are paying attention to the historical record that brings us to this point. And there's remarkable similarity in what's going on today for what went on in the 16th century and even before that. We have to pay attention. I thank you so much for calling in and contributing. I continue to say how proud and privileged I believe I am being in your company. I really appreciate it. It's the weekend. Surround yourselves with people who bring positive dimension to your life. Take a little breather wherever you can get it. And gird yourself for more fighting on Monday. Bye-bye.